Welcome on a bumpy choo-choo train.
Mop, that's the name he goes by. He's a techno musician from Europe, Italy to be specific, with Locomotive. It's from his 2008 album, Kiss of Kali. This is Lead Stories. I'm Beatrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. This is where you get to just express yourselves, hopefully making a point that we can all kind of follow. And I want you to be as tight as possible in your presentation so that we have a lot of people to accommodate and everybody can get a shot at saying what's on their minds. Lots happening, but that's for you to say today. You run the agenda today. Your topics are your topics, and that's what we all will be listening to, your topics, what you choose to talk about, and hopefully somewhere in there you'll tell us why you're talking about it. What is the reason for selecting the particular topic that you're talking about? And so we start very shortly at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Okay, Jay from New York, you get us started today.
Yes, good afternoon, Eutrice. How are you doing and how are you feeling?
Okay, I'm getting better.
Glad to hear that as always. What I wanted to talk about right quick is Joe Biden. Joe Biden is supposedly now the front runner for the nomination for the Democratic Party. My question to you is this, and very simply, why is that? This is a man who has run for office three times, lost three times, and now all of a sudden becomes the front runner. What new ideas does he present over these last 20 years? Is he going to get the same type of treatment from black people that Hillary Clinton got? Because let's be honest, he's the architect of the crime bill that caused black people so much problems. I mean, you know, shouldn't he get the same type of scrutiny in regards to his relationship with the black community?
I don't know where the questions are leading. So this is what, I mean, this is the reality that you're dealing with right now. You're dealing with the reality that he finally has announced. He's now one of what, 20 people running for the presidency on the Democratic side. And typically, they all have baggage. Is his baggage any worse than other people's baggage? I don't know. And you ask, how is it that he became a candidate? Well, how does anybody become a candidate? How do you think he became a candidate?
I guess because of name recognition and people desire for him to run and willingness to back him. But why should I want to know my community back him? What has he done to deserve that backing? I mean, the smartest thing he's done so far, to as far as I'm concerned, is to put a black woman, I think, ahead of his campaign that's also gay. So he's dealing with two groups right there. You know what I mean? As far as his policies, what is his policies? You know,
he's saying that he's gonna be nicer.
That's all he's saying.
These are trivial matters, really. In the scheme of things, these are trivial matters. Let me ask you. I just want to ask you, as you look again at the very question that you're asking, what answer are you getting as to why he has garnered such an incredibly privileged position? He's a newcomer, but he has a long political history. And whatever it is that is associated with that history, what should your question really be as to why Joe Biden now stands pretty tall among candidates? How did that happen? What is the reason?
Well, it's probably because of name recognition, and he was part of the last successful Democratic administration. I don't see anything else. I don't see him to be above any other candidate. I mean, if I had to think about a candidate that's trying to put forward good information, it would probably be Elizabeth Warren. And there's, you know, it seems she's getting no real traction. But I mean, the rest of them, they're not nothing special. They're just candidates, you know.
But you're missing a very important point here. What is the state of affairs with the Democratic Party at this time?
A joke. State of affairs is no messaging, no agenda really, no plan. You know, to me, the Democratic Party is missing something. Because how could you...
Right, and that's exactly why he emerged. It's missing a lot of things. And he's... Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. The Democratic Party is missing a lot of things. And he entered the race because there is what? An opportunity to basically heal wounds. He would be seen to position himself as the guy who can bring the party together, as the guy who we're familiar with. We are familiar with Joe Biden. That counts for a lot. He is the voice of reason. He's an older guy, and this is not about ambition. This is all the ways they're going to be casting him. This is not about ambition, personal ambition. He's been there. But now there's a purpose.
Yeah,
and nobody else, this is how you sell a candidate, and this is how he's already being sold, as a guy who can bring a level head. He can go up against Trump. They're the same age range, essentially. But he presents a diametric opposite to Trump. He doesn't lie as much as Trump does. He has been favorably viewed in the public eye. And all of these things bode well for him as a candidate.
Well, all I can tell you is it's going to be an interesting ride, because to me, he doesn't bring nothing to the table. And if you got...
Well, what I just told you is a lot. He brought the few things that I just ticked off, they're a lot, because right now, very few candidates could actually position themselves that way to be marketed to the general public as viable candidates.
So, Utrice, you're saying that civility is the most important thing right now because of the behavior
that's what you're saying. I said what I had to say very clearly. I'm talking about how a person gets marketed in this time, at this particular time. You're looking at two diametric opposites, and the party figures that Biden has a best shot of comparing, when we compare the candidates, Trump and Biden, you have a scatterbrained crazy guy on one hand, you have a settled, reasonable guy on the other hand. You have a guy that lies like hell, you have a guy who's easygoing, telling the truth. He has had the experience of dealing with many different communities, and he seems to be well thought of. This is not me speaking for him. These are the realities we're dealing with. We're at a time when the party is fractured, very seriously fractured. None of the candidates running can present a portfolio that speaks to bringing people in the party together and then bringing the party to the people together. He seems to be the one that they think can do it best. So I always have to remind you, when you're talking about politics, you can't talk as if, you know, there are these set lines of what ought to be and what is right and what is wrong. None of that applies. It is what will work. And what will succeed.
All right. Have a good weekend, sis.
You too. Thanks a lot, Jay, for your call. Eric from Brooklyn, you're up.
Hello, Utrice.
Hey, Eric. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
All righty. So what are you freeing your mind of today?
I just want to touch on this Biden situation. You know, I have two daughters, and the aspect of a kind of pedophilia nature about him is a serious concern for me. I mean, amongst all the other things, I don't think what you said about him being kind of honest and the that stuff.
No. Let me be real clear.
No, I know. I know what you were saying.
Biden is honest.
I know what you were saying.
That he, at this point, is best positioned to be marketed as such.
Exactly.
Oh, all right.
That absolutely has to be dispelled. I think we should never repeat any of that nonsense because of the fact of how criminal he has been in terms of how he has participated in government in this country, with the crime bill, with, you know, helping to orchestrate all of these wars. He's been pretty much front and center. So if there is, there's that point. Now, there's a clip on YouTube that people should check out of all of the times that Biden has groped little girls and women. Now, if you don't believe your lying eyes, that's your problem. But as a man who has two daughters, I can't imagine anybody touching my kids, you know, in their breast area and pressing themselves up against my kids the way this man has. So I don't understand what people are failing to see when they look at these images. I don't understand it. There's this also this image on YouTube where he was
here's
with Jeff
though. Here's the thing, because you made the leap, and the from what you are describing, I have concerns about the material that was shared with the public. When people do these things, the understanding is that they're telling you this guy is a criminal, and that is not fair. It is not fair. If he did these things and people felt that these were crimes that he committed, then he should have gone to court and he should have been charged with crimes. He wasn't.
So Jeffrey Epstein
this is very important, because this happens to people all the time.
No,
people misinterpret things.
It's something that we should look at.
No. You should look at it. Why? Because somebody put up a video on YouTube, and the implication is he's guilty of a crime. And now, the view on the part of people viewing this video is that he is a pederast, because things look that way. That is not enough. We have to be very, very clear about these things.
Okay, all right.
Because the public is also being manipulated. Who put up that video?
Let me move on to Mueller.
But first, do you understand the point I'm making? That
I have
to be on guard all the time, because
I don't really agree with your point, because I think sometimes
the battle is for your mind. When people do these things under the guise that they're performing a public service, that they want you to know special things about somebody, it could be Biden, it could be you, it could be anybody. They put together a piece of propaganda that makes it appear that the person is doing something awful, and because of that, you should have a specific point of view about the person. Because
I'm not saying that. Sometimes we confuse things too much. Sometimes when you see something, you know, you can't interpret it so many different ways. If he wasn't in the public view, and somebody was saying something about Biden, oh, he's touching up little girls or whatever, and you don't see it, that's a different case. But if you see it yourself, and it's on stage, and these kids are like shrugging him off, or in one clip, Jeff Sessions had his little niece there. And Biden goes to grab him, and he smacks his hand off of the girl. Now, I'm just saying, I'm not saying that should be people's interpretation. I'm saying that people should look at these things. Because now, I mean, for example.
No, but when you say people should look at these things, you're saying exactly what I'm just saying.
No,
you've come to a conclusion. And that's why the video was made.
If you say that there's a video of a cop choking out a young man or you know, somebody for selling Lucy's, right? They could paint it all kinds of different ways if we didn't see it. But since we got to see it, we were like, wait a minute. I know what I see. He choked out the man, and the man died. So there's a difference between hearsay and people just saying stuff about these people, and then you getting to see it yourself. There's a little bit of a difference there that I think is appropriate.
But then we have to also remember that this particular field where people can manipulate things to look like other things, we have to remember that we, the consumer, we are the ones targeted, and the mind is already made up. Here is a case of a guy who is a pederast. He's a child molester. and it looks like it, and you would swear that it is it. But we don't know that that is it. We should take these things with a grain of salt, is what I'm saying, because
I understand.
Things have become very, very sophisticated now in the ways that people are manipulating our minds. It's happening all over. I'm not saying that he do it or that he did do it. I'm saying that as a consumer of information, you have to be on the alert all the time.
Yes, I agree. Now, can I make a comment about the Mueller report?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. I think that this is a bunch of nonsense. Now, in terms of Mueller, this is a criminal. This is somebody that's lied all the time. This is somebody that has no respect for the laws of this country. And rounding up people and just locking them up, like he did with Muslims after 9/11, just because. So these people take and they do whatever they want with the law, the so-called law in this country. I don't know why anyone is respecting these people. And you know, a Mueller report, these things are big.
These people
so they get
about.
To waste your money. They get to waste
but
your money.
But who are you talking about?
I'm talking about media. I'm talking about across the board. This is the big news. The Mueller report, you know, he's saying this, and then he's saying that, and he's not really saying this. They get to waste our money for 2 years. The Democrats, and come up with absolutely nothing but hearsay, once again. And you know, there's no conclusion to it, and it's deliberate. It's meant to just keep us holding our breath and, you know, thinking things about Donald Trump. And is he a good guy? No. He's a bad individual. But a lot of the people saying that he's bad are also the criminals that have been in charge forever. You know, so are they going to really go as far as they need to go to get this criminal behind bars? No. Because that would upturn their own ship. That would capsize their own boat. So they're just keeping us, wasting our money, wasting all this, you know, all these resources to keep us in suspense, thinking that something is happening that is not. They don't intend it to happen. That's why I can't stand.
But something
Democrats.
Is happening. It doesn't look
happening?
Like it, but something is happening.
Utrees, what is happening?
What is happening is that there are procedures that have to be followed. Mueller was brought in as special counsel on this case.
He's a criminal.
Not a prosecutor.
But he's a criminal.
But you know, you're making judgments without understanding what is
Utrees.
Happening.
Utrees. Isn't Obama a criminal? Isn't Bush a criminal?
But he hasn't been charged.
He may
be a criminal in your mind. They may be criminals in your mind. They haven't been charged.
Utrees, what you're saying is exactly why we can't get anywhere. Because we believe these people.
You want people to just bolt in the middle of the night, snatch Donald Trump by the scruff of his neck, and put him in jail. That's not how it works.
No,
they're a legal processing. I'm trying to explain it to you.
I don't want you to tell me
I agree with you about how slowly it moves. I agree with you about how frustrating it is that things seem to take such a long time and are unnecessarily convoluted. Yes, I agree with that. However, you also have to see the other side. This process is being deliberate because it is so vitally important. You're talking here about the possible impeachment of the head of state of a country, one of the most important countries in the world. This is not something to be taken lightly. And you really have to cross all your T's and dot all your I's. Because
why doesn't Comey factor into this debate?
Every little bit of room you grant the other side, they will take it to fight against you. So you have to be deliberate.
Donald
now,
Trump
here's the counsel appointed to look into these allegations. And he's done that. He's done that within the parameters set for him in this case. Remember, don't confuse him. He's not a prosecutor in this case. The prosecutor, if there is to be one, will be Congress. This is an impeachment process. So,
Can I ask you one question? And then I'll leave it. Do you have any reasonable belief that there's going to be any outcome from this?
Yes.
Do you think there's going to be a result, anything concrete that results?
I don't know what result will be.
I mean,
but
it is
important that we understand what is happening. You can't decide how it ought to go. It's been laid down in the law for a long time how this ought to happen. This is not the first and only case in which they've had to make a decision. This is part of our law.
Uh-huh.
When a president is suspected of criminal conduct that should lead to his removal from office, it is not an ordinary prosecution. I mean, it's frustrating to us, but we have to deal with it. So he is not a prosecutor. Remember that. He was not brought into this case to prosecute the case. He was brought in to investigate.
Can we agree that the last, like, if any ordinary citizen had done half of, I mean, half
yeah, but
of
you
what
see,
any of
you,
these
you
last
already
three
contradicted
presidents
yourself.
Have done?
He is what? Not an ordinary citizen.
Okay, so he's
the
above,
president
he's above
of the United
everybody.
States.
He's a citizen. He's a citizen. And that's why when we put them, we
but
make them like godlike.
He's an ordinary citizen. He occupies the highest position in the land. You just have to deal with that.
No, we just excuse their criminality because that's
no,
why.
No, no, come on. You
massive
be,
crime.
Be
you
fair.
Bush lied as
you expect, what, do you expect somebody, you put 12 people in a jury box and you say, let's go? Is that what you think this ought to happen in the case of a president?
I mean, Charles Taylor, what did they do? Gaddafi, they don't respect presidents. Gaddafi,
see,
they sodomized him with a bayonet.
You're starting now, you're
in
starting
America,
a journey
we don't,
way far away from the situation at hand. We're talking
no,
here
not.
About the possible prosecution of the President of the United States with an eye toward
removal. I don't think they're any different from any other president.
But you are,
they should
in
be
this
respected
sense, you
according
are
to what
I gotta
they
tell
do.
You point blank, you are wrong. Because
what?
This is not an ordinary citizen. This is a citizen who has been elected by millions of people to occupy the highest office of the United States. This is a commander-in-chief. He is not ordinary. And if he is suspected of committing crimes, there are procedures that have to be followed in order to establish just that. And then comes a trial, and that's what Congress is for. In fact, Mueller says exactly that. He can't go any further. He cannot prosecute this case. He's not allowed to. He does not have that power. The power to prosecute this case, to conduct a trial against the president, is with Congress. That's what Congress's role is, to put the president on trial and to conduct the trial. And if found guilty of the charges against him, to be removed from office. And then that's a whole other procedure. You know, we can't think that we just apply the same thing. You know, you go down to the Supreme Court, they grab a guy out of the jail cell. Yeah, you're up. And you know, the trial begins a shoddy performance. And at the end of which, The guy goes to jail. And that is done in, what, half an hour? It doesn't work like that. Not with an impeachment. This is very, very specific. And there are rules that have to be followed. And what Mueller is doing, or what Mueller has done, is say, I have followed my directives to the letter. I have not exceeded my authority. I have conducted a probe. These are the things that came out of that probe. He's got a long list of things, long list of people, what they did, what they said, what they knew, and he's put it all together. Now he hands this over to Congress. And Congress's job now is to say, well, these actions look like they are criminal, and we should charge the president. We should charge all of these people, because that's what he also did. The report focuses not only on the president, but the whole network that supported the president in all these allegedly criminal acts. So this is a huge trial. If in fact it does happen, it's a huge trial. You're talking about perhaps dozens and dozens and dozens of people who now have to account for their role in this network of criminality. And the public gets to see it. But that is not the role for Bob Mueller. He's not supposed to be doing that. Okay, so we move on to Lincoln from Mount Vernon. You're on the air.
Hi, good day, Yatrice.
Hello, Lincoln. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Biden, it's about ambition also. And I think we would be naive to deny that. He is no less ambitious than the rest. And it's not about the people. And it's no less than the Clintons, etc., wanting to do anything for power. And the reason why he's able to garner this following so quickly is because of us, the people, because we are gullible and because we are sycophants. It's no different than following the so-called artist, you know, an actor or a singer gets famous, and we do anything for them. And all of what's going on, it has nothing to do with people really analyzing politically. It's not them saying what is good for us. It's about just finding another person to deify. And I think that when I listen to this conversation, I think one of the sad part about it is we keep talking about it like a race. What race? This is not the Olympics. This is not sports. And we talk about them winning. They don't win. They are put in power by we, the people, and I sometimes would like to say we, the idiots, because we rave about someone when they become a politician. How did they get there? Because we voted them in. It's not like when you go... The Olympics is actually more honorable. You go there and you have to outrun someone. When you become a president, there's nothing great, really, because a bunch of people who you've managed to trick come and vote for you and say, okay, we anoint you. But it's not because you're great. So any idiot can become a so-called leader of the country, and especially when the people have capping-minded. And all of what you see going on is a bunch of... It shows you how these various people are putting noose in the people's nose and leading them like cattle any which way. There's no depth to none of it. And those 20, you know, even those, and those who are talking about health and education and all of that, they're not genuine. They know that this is now the in thing. And because it's the in thing, it's easy. They're trying to garner certain parts of the population. I remember when Obama was president and his second term was about to occur, do you remember one of the lowest common denominator he chose? he used the so-called assassination of Bin Laden, and he came on TV and bragged about killing Bin Laden, which means that he was no different from Trump, because he was appealing to a certain mentality. It was the rednecks Obama was appealing to at that particular time when he came and bragged about, oh, you killed Bin Laden. And we keep ignoring these things because we don't want to acknowledge the truth about all of them. I don't care whether they came out of Harvard or how many degrees they have. None of them are noble. None of them is any better than
so
Trump.
So let me ask you, Lincoln, you disapprove of the whole process of elections because for the reasons that you've outlined.
No, what I'm saying to how
then, in your view, should the process go? How do we choose a leader?
What I'm saying to you is the way we run about like chickens without a head shows that we are not thinking of anything in depth. I do believe that people should be voted in, but we should re-educate the people so that when they choose these people, it's not some joke. I mean, even the so-called journalists, even us in this conversation, we're talking about he won and that one won. What do you mean by he won and he whipped the other one? You know, Hillary whipped that one, or Obama. Even Obama, he said, if I ran again, I could win. As if to say he actually controlled.
That is the mentality of the country. You're making absolutely no allowances for how countries choose to do things. I don't participate. That was my choice. But not everybody would see it that way. I have an entirely different take on things. I don't believe in this process, this process that you're outlining. I happen to agree with a lot of what you say. But I'm still asking, what will be a better way? And I can't get an answer. What's the better way?
Okay, I'll tell you my better way. First of all, we need to create a referendum system. And it's a referendum system in which we remove the power of the politicians. And what the politicians should be, they should be just representatives who come to us. And it should be a lot of them, and they come and they tell you the various things at hand. Like, for example, they talk to you about, oh, we want to raise the taxes, or we want to do this, or we want to get rid of capital punishment, etc., etc. And all they should do is, there should be people who pose the pros and the cons, and it should be people of opposite sides. And no matter what the legislation is, it could be the tiniest of things. Could be to raise the bus fare. It would be the people who would be voting for this. Okay? And so, therefore, there would be no...
But where would you say you can find, where could you point us to an example of government working this way?
I think that's a low blow in the sense that if I'm giving you a new idea...
I'm asking you a question. Where in the world is there such a government operating with on the standards that you have just enumerated?
Okay, I'll give you a good example, which is not my... I had this idea since I was a child. This is my idea about the referendum system. But the closest that came to that was Gaddafi. Gaddafi had... He wasn't a direct ruler. It was little, it was pockets of people coming together and voting on the different things about the country. But what I'm saying to you, I think it should be a thing where constantly, every time a law is supposed to be enacted or rescinded, the people should come together. So it will be a constant involvement. And I'm saying, I don't have to say there's some other country that did this for it to work. My mind tells me that this is a work of a system, and I think common sense tells us that, because then now we will get rid of the lobbyists, because if we know that the people come together and the people vote even on the raising or the lowering of taxes, the raising or lowering of bus fare, etc., then the politicians' importance would be dwindled. And so, all they are little figureheads, you know, and they get a salary that's just enough for them to live on. And I don't care how
you're enumerating things, and you're making it sound very easy to do. It is not.
It would be easy to do. A lot of things about life is easier than we think.
Talking about hundreds of millions of people. Logistically, you're talking a nightmare of how do you orchestrate a government to operate this way? You haven't talked about the expense of doing something this way. How do you, every vote would now need a referendum. Where do you get the money to constantly have referendums on things big or small? It is not a practical way.
How do they constantly have money for trillions of dollars for war, even when they say...
You're putting two things together that are not related.
No, they are related.
And making them seem to be the same. Everybody recognizes that function of government, that function of the state, is given a particular treatment and a particular priority because it has to do with the defense of a country. That's a high priority item. Raising the bus fare is not the same.
Well, what I'm trying to say to you, I must say this, and don't take this the wrong way, you're speaking from a place of miseducation. And what I mean by this is money, economics, is not a true science. So when you talk about money,
you're arguing about something else again. You know,
you started your position,
you laid it out. I'm with you all the way. I'm disagreeing with you, but I'm with you. And
you see,
you're hopping all over the place now to figure out how you're going to make an argument, a cogent argument. You're not making a cogent argument. I'm with you.
I am.
Things have to change. I'm asking you, because this is your point of contention. We're unenlightened. The government is a suspect. We have too many interested parties here that are basically spoiling the whole point of what democracy ought to be, which is people's participation. I get all of that. I'm asking you to point me to the direction that is workable, that you think is workable, and you can't find one.
You're not listening then. I'm
listening
to you.
You're very clear. We
need a complete re-education. And what I'm saying to you, for example, when we bring on these people, we call them economists, etc. Let us realize that a PhD in economy is a PhD in BS. It's just like a PhD in religion. We say a religion is true.
All right.
Even though
you're onto a new thing now, discussing whether PhDs are legitimate. I can't take on that discussion. It is way, way past my ability.
It's all we're talking about.
So I agree with you. We have to have some kind of change. What is to be the nature of this change? I think it's an evolving question. But you can't say, dismiss outright everything, throw the baby and the bathwater out. You should be able to see what is salvageable, if anything. Your position, from what I'm reading, is there's nothing salvageable. There's nothing workable.
Actually, I will answer you this. It is salvageable if it's just like, for example, say you and someone have a fight, and it, you know, some egregious crime has occurred, you know, between one of the parties. And one party or both parties can either choose to say, okay, let's take the low road, let's come and, you know, apologize, etc. Let's have a change of heart, a change of direction. And this, anything is salvageable if people were willing to have a change of heart, if people were willing to drop the hubris, etc. But in this world, in this political climate, they don't do that. And that's why we have foolish wars, because nobody is willing to admit that, you know, this is a bunch of crap. We're fighting over nothing. World War One, World War, and even these things they call World War. It was no World War. It was European tribal wars. And then they say World War One, World War Two. We have to change our language. There's no such, there was no World War One. It didn't involve all the people of the world. It was a bunch of Europeans fighting over problems. Africans weren't fighting over nothing.
All right, I agree. Okay. So where does that leave us? Because
now I'm trying to show
you're not, you're not bringing our attention to where you think a solution lies. You're hopping and skipping and jumping all over the place.
The solution is in re-education, changing the system, re-education, demystifying politics, economics, etc., teaching the people the truth. Let them realize that we have been swallowing lies for years and we need to change all of it. That's the solution.
All right. Well, okay. It always is, to me, very enlightening talking with you. And I'm hoping that we are getting closer and closer to seeing where the problem is and where the solution can be. Thanks, Lincoln, for your call.
Okay.
Thanks so much. Okay, we're moving on. Let me see who's. Leona, you're next.
And greetings to your audience.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Three quick things, if you don't mind, in terms of freeing my mind. First, I'd like to express sympathy to you for the fall that you had. I was sorry to hear that, and I'm glad that you're getting better, and I admire how you just keep it moving no matter what. Good God.
Just keep moving. That's the secret. Just be a moving target if you can. If you have to be a target, be a moving one.
Yes, ma'am. The other thing I wanted to say was that I heard on the radio one time, I don't know the gentleman's name, but he characterized U.S. presidential elections as musical chairs in the system of white supremacy. And I often think he nailed it to a degree. But the other thing, I wanted to, something I've been thinking about this week is a quote, and I'll be quick, from this book by Napoleon Hill, of all people, the author of Think and Grow Rich. The book is called Outwitting the Devil, The Secret to Freedom and Success. And he says in this book, on page 194, there's a quote, and it says, "The habit of expressing loosely organized opinions is one of the most destructive of habits. Its destructiveness consists in its tendency to influence people to guess instead of searching for the facts when they form opinions, create ideas, or organize plans. The habit develops a grasshopper mind, one that jumps from one thing to another but never completes anything. And, of course, carelessness in the expression of opinions leads to the habit of drifting. From there, it is only a step or two until one is bound by the law of hypnotic rhythm, which automatically prohibits accurate thinking," end quote. And since I came across this thing a few days ago, I've been more conscious about expressing opinions or uninvited opinions and thinking that he might have something here, too. What are your thoughts, if any, on that?
Well, I think, at least I'll tell you what I think in terms of the work I do.
Mm-hmm.
I accept that everybody should be able to express an opinion. I mean, we didn't go to school to learn how to express an opinion.
Mm-mm.
But that doesn't mean that we can't get better at it. And so we just have to deal with each other on that level, that we are likely, more likely than not, to encounter a situation where people expressing opinions to the best of their ability. And all you need to do, or you should consistently do, is just kind of nudge them in the right direction. Eventually they'll get it. We have to have a lot of patience. It's not that you, and even with ourselves, people who are saying, well, they're not really following a sequential order in their thinking, the counter to that is, who says you have to have sequential order? Who says that there must be sequential order in your thinking? Which is another way of saying, this is perfection, and you better, you know, pursue it. I don't believe that. I believe that a thought or an opinion that properly and correctly reflects the thinking of the person, it's I prefer that 100 times more than some artificial, you know, ordering of your thoughts. I do not approach a conversation in the same way as I approach classroom instruction. We're human beings. We're interacting.
Yes.
And the joy of it is finding a place where we intersect. That is the beauty of conversation and of learning. Because I do not require you to be on you. I require you to be you. I expect you to be you, and you should expect me to be me. Somehow, when we come together, we can work it out. We can figure each other out. But we do not get the encouragement to go there. We always have people telling us what we ought to do, how we ought to behave, how we ought to encounter each other, which is not quite human. By the way, I think.
Okay, yes. Yeah, I imagine, especially coming from another human who...
Yeah, exactly.
Unequal.
We come to each other unknown to each other with all kinds of things happening in our lives, all kinds of experiences shaping us and what we think and what we feel. And that is the beauty of life. How do we, when we come up against each other, how do we work it out that A, it's going to be an exciting encounter, B, that we will find a way, we can work it out, so we will find a way even if we disagree. But the whole idea of human contact, to me, is the thing we ought to be pursuing, not the behavior, but the contact, the integrity of the contact. Is it real? Is it genuine? Is it human?
Okay.
I don't want to meet up with a robot or somebody who comes to me with all kinds of preset notions and attitudes and ideas. You're not human. I come to you with all my faults. You come to me with all your foibles. And somehow we will arrive at a point of perfection. And that is a genuine desire to hear each other. A genuine desire and respect to learn from each other. And you can't get better than that. So I don't run around regulating people's behavior.
Gotcha.
You know, okay. You are who you are and what you are, meaning the sum total of your experiences and your thinking. That's who you are. I don't know at what point in life I'm meeting you. You don't know what point in life you're meeting me. But we could figure something out. We could at least have a decent conversation and we can learn something from each other, which is fascinating. Oh, well, we're going to go. Thanks so much for calling, and we'll meet up with each other on Monday again. Bye-bye.
Like a train.